All right, everybody, we're going to get started. I'll give you a quick heads up. The first hour is the power hour, and the second hour is general questions. If you want to get in on the power hour, you need to press one as soon as possible. We don't always get to all the questions. Calls are starting to roll in pretty heavy, but you've still got time. If you've got a question, a comment, a topic about anything at all, but especially for the power hour, go ahead and press one on your phone right now, and we'll get to you. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, getting your authority. The list goes on and on. Today is the power hour. We take your calls specifically about engines, performance, troubleshooting, maintenance, upgrades, fuel mileage, you name it. And we're going to get to those calls in just a little bit. Joining me to help out from Pittsburgh Power, we've got Bruce and Ethan and John. Hey, guys, welcome back.
Kevin, thank you for having us. As always, it's a pleasure. This is our favorite hour of the week.
There you go. Mine, too. Mine, too. I always get excited. There's always something good going on this hour.
Well, you know, with our engineering department, they're so progressive that, yes, we do come up with something just about every week. And we're going to let John tell you what's new for this week.
All right. What's up, John?
I just wanted to report back on our latest VG conversion. We'd done a retrofit on a D-Deck 4 for a fella, and he's gone from about 7.8 miles per gallon to 8.6 consistently. He emailed me about his first tank, and I thought, okay, that's a good one. And then he emailed again the next week, and then he emailed again this week, and it's still there. And this is a fellow that runs hard. He said he's not a 58-mile-an-hour. He's more of a 65 to 70-mile-an-hour guy. And he doesn't haul super heavy, but he's, you know, loaded. And he's, he really, really loves the what we've done with the power curve and the way the truck runs with the VG conversion. The ability to run with a much lower RPM, and the raised torque that we've got throughout the power band is really making a difference there, fuel mileage-wise. So anyone out there with a glider or the D-Deck 4, and if this is something you really ought to consider, or any other, you know, pre-emission Detroit, we could retrofit this VG turbo onto it and really get some great results out of it. With we're calling it VG optimization now, so we're optimizing the boost curve with the VG turbo.
VGO.
Yep. VGO, I like it, yeah.
VGO. So give me those numbers again, the fuel mileage numbers. Was that 7.8.6?
He was mid to high sevens. He said his tanks before we did it were in the mid to high sevens. You know, 7.8 was about as good as he could go, and now he is mid to high eights. So 8.6 has been lowest he's done is 8.3, 8.6 consistently, and he said he's been 8.9 at one point too. So, but he seems to be averaging about 8.5 now.
That's incredible. First of all, it's already reasonably good fuel economy where he was. High sevens, you know, a lot of trucks just aren't achieving that. So that's a good starting point. You know, if we take somebody and we start and they're at 5 and we get them to 6, that's a huge improvement cost-wise. But that's like low-hanging fruit. I mean, if somebody's getting 5, there's so many easy ways to get them to 6. But when somebody's in the high sevens, getting them to the high eights is a challenge, a real challenge. And I can tell you I've never found one thing that would do it. So that's incredible.
We've had similar results. We've got 3 of these out there in the world right now. We've got similar results with all of them. And this particular truck, he's got all the right stuff. It's the Super Singles. I'm not sure which gear it is. It's the D-Deck 4. He's got the aero stuff. You know, he knows how to drive, obviously, too. So he's getting the most of it.
And that's kind of my point. This isn't low hanging fruit. This isn't a truck that, you know, somebody hasn't done anything to, and we go in and we get that huge bump right at the beginning. This is somebody who's been working on fuel mileage, has achieved good numbers, and now one change makes that big of a difference. That's really promising.
It's a more extensive change than you may realize. There's been a whole lot of time spent on the dyno. In the late nights that we'd spent on the dyno, watching what the torque curve had done and just seeing how it worked and the amount of fuel we were able to take out of the programming, the way we were narrow the pulse width up as much as we did and still have the thing produce the power it was producing, I thought big things were going to happen, and it seems that it has.
Yeah,
because it's just simple math when we're there on the dyno. If we're making power and pulling pulse width out, then obviously we're making power with less fuel, right?
Right, right. Making power more efficiently, which is kind of like the holy grail. I've been saying for a year or two now, there's just nothing new on the horizon. You know, there's nothing I was excited about. We were doing the same old stuff, which was all good. It all works. We know it works. But I'm waiting for that next thing. And this really sounds pretty amazing.
And I'm really pleased with what we've been able to do there. I really am. It's impressive, and it was fun to be part of. And, again, like I said, the late nights on the dyno, there's a whole lot of work. It really wasn't simple. It's not just stick the turbo on there. Let's put it that way. There's a lot to it. And it makes a big difference.
I kind of understand. I mean, I don't, you know in depth, but I know that you're like mapping out, you know, exactly what that turbo needs to do under multiple situations with lots of different input. I'm sure it gets incredibly complicated.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
But we're really, really pleased about that. I've got another announcement I'd like to make. We are looking to take our tuning and diagnostic capabilities on the road, in that we're offering a dealership, shall we say, to shops, you know, throughout the country. We're looking to set people up in all corners of the country with a laptop if need be. We're not doing this to sell laptops and data links, but we will provide you with a laptop and a data link. And in some instances, that might be easier, since we could outfit it with all the software that you'll need as well before it leaves here. And on that end, you know, we'll pretty much sell that for what we have in it. But what we're doing is trying to set dealers up that we could remotely do ECM tuning. And then things like this VG deal, you'd be able to install it yourself and then let us take over and be able to do the programming and get it all working on our end. But as well as programming, we'll offer diagnostic help as well via, you know, remote on the computer. So that's we've got two fellas really interested right now. We've put two complete kits together that we're going to get out there. There's one in Chicago and another one in Eastern PA that should be leaving here shortly. But we'd like to cover the country, to be honest with you. So if we've got a, you know, if you've got a favorite shop of yours that does work for you and would like to maybe be interested in adding our expertise on tuning and diagnostics as well. I was watching Leroy today, was online with a guy who was actually driving up and down the road. He had his laptop hotspotted to his phone, and Leroy was actually watching what his truck was doing while it was going up and down the road. So that's something we're going to look to offer in the future and do a whole lot of. So if anyone out there has got a shop that they're happy with, they're in some other corner of the country where we aren't and have trouble getting to Pittsburgh, talk to them or have them contact us about doing our tuning and our diagnostics via remote. By the internet.
That is awesome, because one of the most common, not really complaints I get, but I get a ton of people saying, boy, we love what Pittsburgh Power's doing. We never get to that part of the country. It's, you know, and my answer always is, well, that's why your truck has wheels. You know, get it to that part of the country. But it's really, I get a lot of that from people. Do they have, is there any other location? Can I get this done anywhere else? So we will certainly help you spread the word here.
Yeah, please do. As well as the tuning, we're going to offer our foundation products at a discount to folks who sign on to do this as well. So dampers, balancers, mufflers, manifolds, things that, you know, that are our own products. So we're also going to offer a dealer deal to go along with it.
We will let's talk about that, and I've got some ideas. We can certainly get that moving.
All right. Thanks, Kevin.
Excellent. All right. One thing real quick, and then we'll get some phone calls. You've talked a lot about the electric truck, the Nikola. Now everybody's jumping on board. Freightliner is, you know, putting together an electric truck, mostly a distribution local kind of thing. Tesla has announced. But here's the interesting thing, because they're still pushing this Nikola truck, and it's such a joke in so many ways. But I saw another article today where they're saying they have achieved zero emissions. I'm not exactly sure how they make that claim, because there really is no such thing as zero emissions. Somewhere down the line, we have to create emissions to create power. I mean, I don't understand what they have a turbine on board. That turbine creates emissions. So I don't know how we can claim to be zero emission, and the article didn't really explain it any better. But the point, I scrolled down after the article, and I was reading comments. And the interesting thing is how many people think this is Tesla doing this.
Oh, I've seen that too. They've hit all the automotive outlets that I like to read as well. They're making news with it. It's interesting.
Yeah, and people are confusing it with Tesla. That was one of my first complaints about them using that name. And people are thinking this is Tesla, and it's absolutely not. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I've got Bruce and John and Ethan with Pittsburgh Power with me here. And anything else, guys, or should we get to some phone calls?
I think we should get to the phone calls, Kevin. Maybe we'll get a question that I can answer now.
Well, here we go. Let's see what we've got. We're going to head off to New Hampshire to get started. Dylan, welcome to the program.
Hello. Hello?
Hello.
Yep, you're there.
Yes, I've got a question for Bruce and Kevin, I guess. I'm looking to buy a truck in the next 2 months or so, like in the $20,000 to $30,000 range. And I'm wondering, with the new improvements you've made on the VG Turbo, if a 04 to 07 and only having to deal with the EGR valve would be a good buy. It seems like a lot of the pre-03 and older trucks are – It's harder to get your hands on one, and I don't know if that's because they took them off the road as to use as gliders, or they're just too old and seem to be in rough shape.
Well, Kevin, I'll answer this first, and then you can add in. With the advances that we've made in taking care of the EGR problems and making the EGR valves work properly, and even on the 2008 newers, we have a huge success rate. It wouldn't bother me to go out and buy a 2010
Bruce,
or 11.
Bruce, you're breaking up real bad.
Well, Have Bridget,
uh-oh.
Can you have...
I think we lost
Can it. We have Bridget call
Bruce?
Me on the shop line?
Hey, could you have... Could Bridget call back on the shop line?
We're going to try and fix that connection there. John, do you want to jump in and take over what you're saying?
Do you have me? Am I clear?
Yep, you are.
Okay, good. Have Bridget call Bruce on the shop line. He was on his cell phone. I don't know what's going on with that, but we've got him locked up in another office, so we don't have any feedback. So call him back on the shop line. It should be good.
Okay. Got it.
All right. I fully recommend that we can do the same tuning that we do with the retrofits on those trucks that came with the VG Turbo. And that era in particular, where we do only have the EGR valve to deal with, in addition to that, would be a wise choice. Yep. I'm on board with you buying that truck or something from that age range.
Got it. So that's kind of I'll jump in. That's kind of a change for me, and I'm you know, moving along, kicking and screaming. But I'm finally seeing progress with these trucks. I'm seeing when they have a problem, you guys are able to solve it. I love the idea that you're spreading around the country, and I know that's going to take some time, but that gives me a lot more hope that we can.
Are we on?
I'm still here.
Well, me and you are. We're not on the show anymore. Or can you still hear?
No, I can't.
It's gone.
Yeah, but it didn't kick me out of the call.
Huh.
They lost us on their end.
On their end?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because we're still connected.
Should we call back?
I don't know that answer.
Huh.
I've never had... Normally, Skype would drop the call.
Yeah. Yeah, we had that one time that was happening.
Yeah, where it kept dropping us.
I'm going to eat my sandwich while we're offline.
This is different. Because this is on their end. Yeah, I'm still connected. Well, if they buzz in, I wouldn't be able to.
Yeah, turn that off of DND.
Oh, this is different. Off.
The ability to fix VG Turbo would be a great option. So I think we might have some phones fixed here. Let me double check. John, are you guys with me again?
Well, I'm back.
Yep, we made
okay.
it back.
There we go. I don't see Bruce yet, but we'll keep working on that. In the meantime, we're going to go to Terry in Florida with an oil sample. Terry, welcome to the program.
How are y'all doing today?
Good. What's on your mind?
I was just looking at the oil sample. I had more overhead done in October at Pittsburgh Power.
We're back.
They put up. Do what?
Yep, we're good. Go ahead.
Go ahead, sorry.
Okay. I got a 98 Freightliner FLD 120 with the 60 series Detroit in it. I had the overhead done at Pittsburgh in October. That first sample in January come back, looked good. Granted, 500 miles after I got the sample back, my bull gears went out. Then the other two is after I had the bull gears replaced.
Okay, so just so I'm clear, John, I'll give you some numbers from the sample. You guys can jump in. When was the overhead done? What month?
October. October last year.
October of last year. Okay, so I'm looking at the sample right after that. And there was a big improvement, and it was what I expected. Back then, you were showing a lot of soot for a Series 60, 2.8. Right after the overhead, it went down to 0.8, which is a good thing. There's a little bit of fuel dilution. John, we're at 4.0. Now, this is the gas chromatography, the really sensitive. So I've kind of been saying 4 is when we really start thinking about doing something, but I don't necessarily want to jump right back in and, you know, replace injectors. So keep an eye on that. Where I see the bigger problem, much bigger problem, is the most recent sample, 55 for silicon. We're getting a lot of dirt in from somewhere.
Well, I got a Fleet air filter, but see, that was a sample I got back right after they went in the front of the motor to redo the bull gear.
John, what do you think?
That shouldn't have added silicon. The silicon shouldn't have gone up because of the work that was done on it, unless they used a whole lot of abrasives that they didn't clean up that made their way into the pan, and then that should go away in the next sample, I'd think.
Yeah, well, it back in December, it was 37, which is high. I mean, I'd like to see it under 10. 37 yep. was high back in December, and then in April it was 55, so it's climbing. So right. that indicates to me it's coming from outside the engine. Like we've got a problem in the intake system, and we're sucking dirt somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. Check all of the intake plumbing. Make sure there's not a rub somewhere. Quite often we'll see a rub on an intake pipe where it's where it crosses the manifold or above the valve covers there or somewhere where it was mounted. And you know, years and years though, you actually rub a hole into them. So take a really good look at all your intake piping.
Okay. Well, I redone all the oil. I changed all the oil. I'm gonna start over again and see what happens. But I'll check all that. Yeah.
Now, I see you've got Rotella T in here. Have you added some sort of an additive?
No, I don't think the man, I told him to put Shell Rotella T in it, but to be honest with you, I don't think he did. I think he threw some of the oil in it because samples just don't look right.
I can almost guarantee they put something else in it. Shell Rotella has very little, if any, moly. And all of a sudden, your moly jumped up to 71. So moly came from somewhere, which is either an additive or it's an oil that has a lot of moly in it. Your boron jumped way up. The magnesium jumped way up. Those are all additives that can be in the oil, but they don't have to be in the oil. Companies use different additives to accomplish the same things. So all of a sudden, your additive package is way out of whack compared to what should be in Shell Rotella T. So something else got put in this engine.
Yeah, well, this time I noticed Shell Rotella T because I done it myself, so I redone all of it. But you can look back on the history of this truck. I have always had a soot problem with this truck, and I've had it for 6 years.
Well, the soot problem actually improved tremendously after the overhead, which is
yeah,
what...
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a time, John, just so you know, back in May of 2015, the soot was at 4.9.
Yeah, that's pretty high.
Yeah.
That, yeah. Again, how many miles are on this engine, or the cylinder head in particular?
No. Well, the truck's old Dick Simon truck. It's got probably over 1,700,000, but it was in frame somewhere around 1,000,001.
Did they replace the cylinder head when they did it?
That I don't know. It was done before I got it.
Okay, good. Loose valve guides will cause a lot of soot.
Here's what I would recommend, Harry. I know you changed the oil. Let's get 15,000 on that new oil and get another sample, and we'll kind of reset and see what we're looking at. Looks like we've got Bruce back as well, so we'll get back right after this with more of your calls and questions. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. It is the Power Hour. I've got Bruce and John and Ethan here with me. Bruce, are you back with us?
I am, and I wanted to say one thing about the guy with the high silicon. Take the air filter housing apart. Make sure there's no holes rusted in it. Make sure nobody stepped on it. Sometimes when the air filter's under the hood and you're at a truck wash, they'll tilt the hood. They'll stand on top of the engine, and a lot of these engines have plastic valve covers. You don't want to do that. Sometimes they'll stand on an air filter. They did that to a good friend of mine on his T600 Kenworth, and wow, did we get a lot of silicone. We had to replace the air filter housing. And also you should measure the air filter and the depth of the air filter housing to make sure that the filter is touching on both ends and sealing.
Good point, because we're getting a lot of dirt in that engine from somewhere, and it's going up. So I have to believe there's a problem that needs to be fixed. Let's go to North Dakota. John, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin and Bruce and everybody there at Pittsburgh Power. I got a new little saying for you, Bruce.
What's that?
When you're talking to customers, cheap, pass, accurate, pick two.
Keep what accurate?
Cheap, fast, or accurate, pick two.
Cheap, fast, or accurate. You can pick two,
you can't have...
Yeah.
That's right. That's like cheap price. You want a cheap price.
Yep.
You want good quality, good service, or a cheap price. Pick two.
Yep.
And it's the same way with hauling freight. You can't do a great job for $1.10 a mile. And
no,
we have people out there today. We had a guy in here who says he crisscrosses this country, California to the to Pennsylvania, $2,600. How can you possibly do that?
Yeah, and so what my mechanic at home for my car said to me, I thought it was something good that you guys could use a little bit there. You guys are quality and accurate. May not be the cheapest, but it's the way to go.
Hey, our labor rate's about $20 or $30 less than Freightliner dealers.
Well,
yeah.
Hey.
So we try to stay about $20 less than Freightliner dealers in major cities.
Well, that's great.
And that goes with Kenworth and Peterbilt, too.
You guys have a good day. Thank you.
All
You're
right.
Welcome.
Thanks. Let's head off to Kansas. Brian, welcome.
Hello.
Yep, it's your turn.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I was calling regarding I have a 2008 model Cummins ISX, and last week we had an incident where the crankshaft was broken between the number two and number three cylinder. And I was just trying to figure out what type of scenarios would cause a crankshaft to break. I mean, 20 years, I've never heard of a crankshaft breaking before inside of an engine.
Oh, we just had an Acer Cat in with one broken. How many miles were on this 2008?
Roughly 700,000 miles.
Did you ever change the torsional damper on the front of the crankshaft?
That is no.
And have you heard Kevin and I talk about it, and have you read about it in my articles and on our website or in our parts catalog?
Yeah, actually on a couple of my Cat engines, I have a small fleet. I've actually purchased the balancer and dampener from you. That was the only Cummins I had in my fleet, and we've had a lot of problems with it since day one, but I didn't expect at 700,000 miles to have such a catastrophic failure. And I don't know whether it's driver error or the shop is claiming that it's driver error. But
I don't think it's driver error. I think it's a result of not changing the torsional damper on the crankshaft. And let me say another statement here. D.A. Santucci,
sure,
who used to build my race car engines, his saying was, metal fatigue is a racer's biggest enemy. What is a semi-truck doing when it's pulling a hill with 80,000 pounds? Do you think that thing's working hard?
It's working hard, yes.
It's working tremendously hard, much harder than a race car, because a race car is on the throttle, off the throttle, and it doesn't pull a trailer. And they're not wide-open throttle going up 8-mile mountains. So you need to change those torsional dampers on the front of those crankshafts. They're only good for 10 years or a half a million, and that was probably the cause of your failure.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you so much,
Take
gentlemen.
Care.
Mm-hmm. All right.
You're welcome.
Thanks for all. Let's see. We're off to Kentucky. Ben, welcome.
Hello.
Yep. What's on your mind?
I have a 2012 Volvo with an ISX engine in it. And last night, as I was climbing a hill, as soon as I downshifted, it just died in motion. And I was just wondering, is that catastrophic or an emission-related issue? Or should I just get rid of this truck?
What do you mean by die? Did it, the truck shut off, or did it just lose power?
Actually, kind of both. It started to slightly lose power prior to it. The check engine fault light came on, and then as I was climbing that slight incline, I downshifted, and then it just died. I just barely made it to the shoulder, and I couldn't turn it over or anything.
Is it locked up?
Yes.
So are you in a shop now?
Yes, sir.
Did they move the pan down to see why it's locked up?
Nope. The last I heard about it, when at the roadside service guy, he tried to do something, and he couldn't turn on the engine. He couldn't turn it, and then they just determined it's an internal issue that the reason it won't turn over is because something in the engine is locked up, and that's why they could barely tow it.
Well, when you tow it, you drop the drive shaft, and so the engine has nothing to do with it. So the question becomes, you need to pull the pan down and look up inside while somebody's trying to turn the engine over and see why it won't turn.
Running the check engine light wouldn't be a bad idea either if it came on prior.
Yeah, just see what the fault code is first.
Yeah, it might tell you something like it lost oil pressure or something.
Has there been any work? Has there been any work done on it recently?
I haven't had any. I just had it a couple months.
And, so you've only owned the truck for a couple of months.
Correct, and it's actually a lease purchase, and I think I'm just gonna get out of it. I don't know if this is recoverable or not.
You just gave me the one piece of information I need to answer this question really easily.
I know what that is.
Run to the nearest exit. Do not walk. Do not pass through. Do not collect your $200. Just get the hell out of there.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Why do people still continue to do these lease purchases when they're such a bad deal? Why does everybody do them? Not everybody, but a lot of people.
Well, I wanted to save up to get my own truck, which I'm pretty close to that goal. That's why I was asking.
Well, good. I'm glad you've been saving. And, you know, as long as you were making more money in the lease purchase than you would driving a company truck, as long as you're tracking all those numbers and you know that you are, I still don't like it because here's the risk. The risk is you're driving a truck that you don't own. You have no legal rights to. You're not allowed to modify most of the time. You're controlled on what you can and can't fix. And then when this happens, if you walk away, it's still a huge loss because it's going to take you 2 to 3 weeks to get back up to making money again and have your revenue back in. That's why I don't even like doing these things thinking you're going to make money. The fleets, you know, here's the thing, Bruce. These things are really, really good for the fleets. These trucks are more expensive than they've ever been. They're more complicated than they've ever been. They're giving us way more maintenance nightmares than ever. And the fleet gets rid of all that risk. All they have to do is get somebody to sign the contract, and now all of a sudden that risk gets transferred to these guys. It makes me insane.
Kevin, and some of the charges that they give the owner-operators at their own shop are outlandish. They're taking huge amounts of money. I keep telling people, set aside 10 cents per mile, put it in a maintenance account. That buys tires, oil changes, engine parts, anything the truck needs, and you're always covered, and it's much cheaper than that lease purchase.
Absolutely. Hey, hold that thought. We're going to get to a break. We're going to come right back after this. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, a quick heads up. We're heading into the last segment here of the Power Hour, and then we're going to get to general questions in the next hour, so don't hang up at the end. And if you've got questions about anything at all, it looks like we've got some room in the second hour. So go ahead and press 1 on your phone right now, and we'll get to you in the next hour. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The number to join us. We're in the final segment. We're going to get back to some phone calls. We got lots of questions on the line. So, Bruce, you know, when you look at these things, the way they're set up, the way they're written, there are fleets that make more money leasing trucks than they do moving freight. They should stop calling themselves trucking companies, and they should just call themselves what they really are. They're truck leasing companies.
Truck thieves.
Well, yeah, that too. Here's the thing. You know, I guarantee this last caller has several different escrow accounts that are required under the contract. So every time he makes money, the company holds back maintenance, they hold back tires, they hold back all of these escrows, and when he walks away from this deal, the company is at no risk. They will keep that escrow. They'll fix this truck, they'll release it to somebody else.
That's right. I know very few people that have made it through and been successful with it.
So, yes, educate me a little bit on these. So what happens when they get to the end if they do see it through and pay the whole time? They just end up with a worn-out truck that they've been paying for or renting for that long?
Well, there's a lot of different contracts. That's the other problem with these. I can talk in general, but every contract is written completely different. There's all kinds of variables. I've seen some where when you make your final payment, you owe them a dollar and the truck is yours. I've seen some where I calculated one the other day. The guy in payments alone was going to spend about $170,000 in payments, and then he had a $40,000 buyout.
Wow. And the truck was probably worth about 10 grand, right?
Well, that's the problem. 20. They get down to the buyout. People call me all the time and they go, "Hey, I know you hate these lease purchases, but I made it. I'm at the end. I made my final payment, and now I have to figure out how I'm going to buy the truck." Because to get through 4 or 5 years of these things, their credit hasn't gotten any better. These things don't build credit because they don't report to credit agencies. So if they haven't done something in those 4 or 5 years to get their credit score back up, and they haven't saved any cash, now they're sitting at the end and they're trying to buy out this truck that they've paid for already, but they have no money, they have no credit, and the truck isn't worth what the buyout is, so nobody will finance it for them. So now they're stuck. Now the carrier, here we go back to the carrier, has a paid for asset. It didn't cost them anything, and they get to keep it.
Wow. It's just amazing. And the internet's full of $15,000 to $25,000 trucks, and they're everywhere.
They're everywhere. Yeah. It's just things. It's been my personal mission for a while. I bash these things everywhere I go, and I just keep trying to convince people, do not sign one of these deals.
That's exactly correct.
As far as businesses go to get into, we had a fella in here a few weeks ago, not that I recommend this, maybe he was just lucky, with an FLD-120 that was an older FLD-120 with a Series 60 in it. He bought it for $3,500 and was working it. And I'll be honest with you, I've seen a whole lot worse trucks come through the shop. It really wasn't that bad. And we put it on the dyno, we checked it for blow-by, we dropped the pan and looked at the bearings for him. You know, he had a $3,000 bill here when he was done, but the truck was fine, and he was up and running in business. He'd actually been working it for months before he brought it in.
I have so many stories like this. John's been helping guys buy $10,000 under trucks for years and years. And I have one. This was back in 2014 when rates were just really good. This guy bought a $3,000 FLD. Same kind of story. He paid $3,000 for it, put a couple thousand into it to get it on the road, and then made improvements week after week. In his first 12 months, he generated $2,000 in revenue and kept over $90,000 of it. With a $3,000.
I can see that.
Yeah.
So yeah, there aren't many, and many businesses in the world you could buy into as cheaply as this one, I don't believe, if you're sharp.
No, it's the other beautiful thing about this. Almost every business starts. Your biggest issue is, okay, I the day I open my door, how do I start generating revenue? I have to try to figure out sales. I have to try to figure out marketing. I have to get people to come to my business. Not this one. If I buy a truck today, all I have to do is go online. There's loads everywhere. I don't need to sell. I don't need to market. And I have immediate cash flow. I can take an advance on the load that I pull today. I have money coming in from day one.
But stay away from $1.10 a mile freight or less.
You have to do that for sure. Yep.
I'll even make a stretch here. Just cause, since we're talking about business, we're in the final segment here anyway. I will never make that blanket statement, Bruce, and I'll tell you why. I understand what you're saying. You can't build your business on $1.10 a mile freight. But there are clearly times when there are some lanes that there's a lot of money going into an area because there's not a lot of freight coming out. And if you get really good at load planning, and let me just say an example. Let's say Chicago to Orlando is a really good rate going down because we know there's just not a lot of stuff coming back. So I'll take that good rate from Chicago to Orlando, and maybe I can go out and find something, you know, down in Columbia, South Carolina, going to Texas that pays really well. Well, if I can get that $1.10 a mile from Orlando to Columbia, I'll take it every time.
But you see, you're not running consistent $1, $1.10, $1.50.
Right.
You're not consistently doing that.
Right.
And so you have to stay away from the consistent cheap freight.
Exactly. You use it as a filler on short segments to get you repositioned back to a better lane.
You know, I watch some people that I've known that have been in the industry a long time. They buy a drop deck trailer. They put a roll tarp on it. They build their loads. It might take them a week, week and a half. And I've seen them go across this country anywhere from $13,000 to $17,000. Yes, you have four or five loads on there. Some loads go as $24,000, but that's making money.
Yeah,
this is going with truckloads at a dollar something a mile. That's crazy.
LTL, if you learn how to manage it, is where the really big money is. It requires more skill than planning and work and that kind of stuff. Let's squeeze in another call. Let's go to Ohio. Victor, welcome to the program.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yep. Go ahead.
Yep.
Yes. The first thing I want to say is I want to thank Pittsburgh Power. You guys did an EGR fix for my 05 Columbia back in 2012. And with the Pittsburgh Power muffler, fleet air filter, it slowed down to 60 miles per hour. I was able to go from 6.2 miles per gallon to 7.8. So probably the best decision I've ever made.
Awesome.
Fantastic.
And so that truck, right now it's been having a lot of problems. I've had two rebuilds in the last year alone.
You're going to the wrong shop for rebuilds.
I went to a Clock Power here in Cincinnati, and they did it. They're the first ones who did it. So
Cincinnati, you're not very far from Pittsburgh. Why didn't you come here?
Well, it broke down here, and they couldn't drive it all the way there.
That's all right. We've got tow trucks. We've got a tow truck fleet. Hey, listen to this, Kevin. This mm-hmm. fleet of tow trucks are all A model KWs and 359 Peets. They run Big Cam 3 Cummins and 4 1/4 Cats, and they tow these new trucks in all day long to the local dealers.
Oh, yeah.
Now, here's another complaint that I have. We did all that good work for you and got you the mileage. Then when you broke down and you were in Cincinnati, you didn't come to see us. See? So if somebody does you good the first time, why not go back, even if they're out of the way for you?
Hey, Bruce, that's why I'm coming back to you.
Okay.
Okay, here's the thing. I've got somebody to buy that truck for $10,000, and I'm looking for another truck. And I've got a truck here. It's a 1998 FLD-120, the same truck that you guys were talking about. And my question is, it's got a 3406E cat. I'm not familiar with that engine, so can I get good fuel mileage from that engine? And what should I be looking at? I'm getting a dyno test tomorrow, so what should I be looking for?
I'll let the other guys, the engineers, answer that on the dyno test. And the answer is yes, 3406E cat from 95 through 2003 is a good engine. And yes, you can get great power and good economy. You have to drive it for that. But we can get you good mileage, and you'll love the power.
I agree with all of that. You're going to have to call Pittsburgh Power direct and work with them to help you know what you should be looking for on this truck. So we're all out of time. We'll do it again next week. Thanks for joining us. Be safe. Be profitable. Be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, real quick, we're going to into a second hour here. I've got a couple calls we're going to carry over that I'm going to get to, and looks like we've got a bunch of calls online. I'll give you an update if it looks like we're going to have some openings as we go. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs.
Back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, the list goes on and on. If you've got a question about anything at all, pick up the phone, give me a call, and we'll get to it. In fact, tonight, these one-hour shows go by so quick, I'm going to jump right into questions. We've got a bunch. Let's get to it. We're going to start off in California. Kim, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. How are you today?
Good. What can I help?
Can I, first off, one quick comment. The guy with the Volvo that quit on him, this is a real shot in the dark, but if he fried his main wiring harness, that would have locked everything up. That happened to me.
Well, I'm going to ask him some more questions, but I was getting the feeling that he doesn't have a lot of mechanical knowledge because of some of the things he was saying. So sometimes it's hard. But when the shop says the engine won't turn over, there's two things that could mean. Does it mean when we try to put electrical power to it, nothing's happening? Or does it mean we can put all the electrical power we want, the engine won't move? If the engine won't move, the crank won't turn, the starter can't turn the engine, that means something mechanical is locked up. That's what it sounded like we're saying.
I had my truck in two shops, and I finally got real frustrated with them and took it to a Detroit shop. And they found it in a half an hour.
Well,
that it was the wiring harness. So,
well, we have to clarify because this is super easy to test. we can manually turn the engine. And if we can turn it, that means the engine, the components are moving inside. But if the component, if something locked up inside the engine, then it's not electrical. It is a physical, mechanical problem inside the engine, which is what it sounds like they were talking about. And that is never simple. That we're always talking
right.
something. If that engine stops turning, we've got a big problem.
All right. I got, well, my question is totally different than this.
Okay.
I have my Freightliner for sale. It was parked on Crater Lake Highway in Medford, and a guy went off the road at about 70 miles an hour and hit me. And it was parked. I mean, the truck was parked. I couldn't get the insurance company to do anything until I called the Oregon Investigative Branch of Insurance, and they had to book them. And it's been a month and a half. I know the appraiser they sent out has never dealt with heavy equipment, and I talked to her over 10 days ago, and I still haven't heard anything from the insurance. Any other folks?
So
did a lot of damage.
So how much was the truck for sale for?
I was selling it for $22. By the way, I got you about 8 new listeners because all of the people that called me that were first-time listeners, I ended up sounding like Kevin Rutherford. Well, if you ever owned a truck, this is what you need to do, a rig dig, an oil sample, you need an ECM report. Then I had to explain an ECM report to them. And I said, well, you just have to go to this website and become a listener.
Well, thank you for that. I appreciate it. So it was for sale for $22. Has anybody done an estimate of how much damage there is and what it's going to cost to fix it?
Well, I have a guy that did an estimate for me, but when the four-wheeler hit, he shoved it 6 feet. And we haven't towed it to a garage to tear it down to measure the frame. But his estimate was a little over $12,000. But they've sent out this person that doesn't do heavy equipment. She called me to tell me she was going to go look at it. And the insurance company made it sound like it was a pickup truck, that it was a bumper and a front light bezel. I mean, my guy, he took out the steering, took out the air-to-air, put the radiator into the engine, the whole bumper, the whole front left front of the truck, and that's just what we can see.
Okay, so what has to happen, I mean, the first thing that has to happen is this total? So if the estimate starts coming close to that 20,000 number, there's a very good chance it's just totaled because it's not worth fixing. It's going to cost more to fix than it's worth on the open market. I'm assuming if you added up for sale at 22, you did a little research, and that's a reasonable fair market price for this truck.
It was. What scared me were the miles, but they didn't understand that. At 1.1, added on an in-frame, but I have my last 10 oil samples. She doesn't need one. She was nowhere near needing it. And that why it was hard for a new time buyer to understand.
Your truck?
It was 07 with an 06 Detroit.
Okay, so EGR, no DPF.
Right, and I used less than a gallon of oil. I had the OPS.
Let's
use
something.
Less than a gallon of oil.
Give me some information. What make?
Freightliner Century.
Okay, so it's a Century, and it was what engine?
The Detroit D-Deck 6. It's a 515.
It's an 07 with a Detroit. I'm going to do just a couple quick things here. Okay. So just looking real quick, you're in the ballpark on price. The problem with pricing is they're going to use some different criteria on the insurance. It's possible this thing could end up being total. We just don't know until we get better numbers, which is what the insurance company is supposed to be doing. Now, are you dealing with your insurance company or theirs, the person that hit it?
I have no insurance because it was for sale and I transferred my insurance to my new truck. The insurance company wanted full coverage
for sitting there.
And that was ridiculous.
You might have a problem here.
No, I don't.
Well, you're dealing with his
insurance. With his insurance, which is strictly, they just do cars, RVs.
And that's part of where I'm saying you have a problem. We may be able to solve it, but here's what I would normally recommend. I would normally recommend that you go to your insurance company and let them fight this, because that's part of what you pay them for. But you can't do that because you don't have an insurance company. So your issue is you're dealing with somebody who could give a rip about you. You're not their customer.
Right.
They're going to fight you every step of the way. This is just common. And that's why it helps when we get our insurance company involved and they go kind of fight this for us, because ultimately, if the other insurance company doesn't pay, yours will, but you don't have one. So,
well,
you've got to fight the other company on your own, and that you have two problems. You're not their customer, and they don't deal with heavy trucks.
Right. But the Oregon Investigative Branch, they're on my side. I called and spoke with them, and I explained I didn't have insurance because the truck was sitting for sale. And he said, let me know, and we'll give them a poke.
And so two things. Let me clarify something for everybody else. When you own a piece of equipment, you never want to let it go uninsured. And you're right. Full coverage on this made no sense. All you needed was comprehensive. So
they wouldn't do that.
Yeah, well, then you find another insurance company that will. Because clearly we can insure a vehicle without putting full coverage on it. We can put comprehensive.
Okay, I didn't try enough insurance companies then. Because I tried my personal vehicle. I call them too.
Yeah. So, and then the other thing is, the insurance agency is going to help, but I kind of, the phrase comes to mind, I'm here from the government and we're here to help. I don't put a whole lot of faith in most government agencies. You may end up needing an attorney on this. Let me get to a break. We'll come back and we'll talk right after this. Stick around. Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. I'm going to go back to Kim in California. So, Kim, I guess my advice right now would be work with the insurance commission. I would be calling this other insurance company every single day. I might even call them multiple times a day. I would bug them until something happened. And at some point, you may want to contact a lawyer and just pay him an hour or two to maybe draft a quick letter and make a phone call to let these people know that you're serious.
Okay. Okay. That sounds good.
Because Yeah, because I think you have two problems here. Like I said, one, you're not their customer, and two, they don't understand heavy trucks. And honestly, you know, part of the adjuster's job is to make sure that the company pays out as little as possible on claims. Now, they're a little more motivated when it's a customer because they'd like to keep that customer, but they have, like, zero motivation to help you.
Right. Except they want to keep their ratings in the state, and that's what this gentleman at the government office told me, that they are scared of them.
Yeah, somewhat. So that's why I say try that, see how it goes, but you may end up, you know, contacting an attorney and working out a deal where you pay them for a couple hours and they try to speed this process up for you.
I can do that. Can I ask one? It's just a yes or no question. I've been on keto. I've been on the keto, and it's awesome, and I post my stuff on the BTC website, but I miss my diet 7-Up. Could I have one or two a week?
You can. There are two reasons I would caution you against it. The longer you go without it, the less you will crave it. And I would look for some sort of substitution. Why not try like a sparkling water with some lemon or lime juice put in? You'll get a lot
of. I love the Voss.
The
I
what?
I love the Voss sparkling water. The Voss.
Oh, yeah.
It's glass. I don't want glass in the truck.
Well, there are other options. Kim just reminded me of a good one. Get yourself one of those Soda Stream machines.
Oh, really? She does that, doesn't she?
Yeah, make your own. Make your own, soda water, and then you can play around with lemon or lime or lemon and lime. And I would stay away from any kind of sweetener. You'd be surprised
how
quick we'll acclimate to just drinking some sparkling water with a little bit of citrus juice added. And maybe even in the beginning, you could try, a little orange maybe to add a little sweetness, or you could use a little honey. But the problem with sweetness is as long as we keep giving our body something sweet, it keeps craving something sweet. And that even goes for sweeteners. Yeah, so the longer you go without sweet, the easier it is to just not crave it anymore. And the problem with diet anything is it doesn't take much of those artificial sweeteners to create neurological problems. They're pure poison. They should have never been improved.
I put a little squirt of stevia in my bullet coffee. I mean, a little bit of stevia. But
Stevia is a natural sweetener. If you're going to use a sweetener, I would use stevia. You still have that. Craving issue.
It's sweetness craving,
Right. But I would much rather see you use stevia to own, take Kim's advice, use the Soda Stream, play around. If you want to put a little stevia in, go ahead. Because there's no negative health consequences to stevia. It's just, the sweet craving, which isn't a huge deal. But the artificial sweeteners, would absolutely stay away from those. Let's go to Georgia. Richard, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, I got a fuel tax question for you.
Okay.
I understand buy the cheapest fuel with the highest fuel tax. But one question I got is I've just purchased fuel in South Carolina, and the pump price on this fuel was $2.04 per gallon. My discount that I'm getting for that fuel was $1.83, 1.8317. Now, I know South Carolina's fuel tax is not as much as Florida, and I can fuel in Florida, which their fuel price in Florida, the pump price, is $2.55, and the discount that I get with my fuel card is $2.06.19. So
okay.
If I'm getting a discount on that, which one would still be the best place?
So let's do that. So to kind of simplify this, instead of looking at all four numbers, we can ignore the pump price. That's kind of the whole point of this, is that the important number is the X tax price, the price of fuel without tax in there. And then what we have to do is just do the calculation. So I'm going to go do that right now. We're going to do it.
Hello and welcome. If you're interested in learning about a new way to calculate fuel surcharges that's more accurate, fair, and efficient, I have a personalized video experience prepared specifically for you. To begin, click start.
Fuel tax is 16 cents.
Hey, Kevin, something just cut in on you, so I couldn't hear anything you just said.
Okay. So I'll go back over it real quick. Can you hear me now?
I'm sorry. Yeah, I can hear you now. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. So what we're going to do, we're going to ignore the original price because all that matters is your discount price. We're going to take the two discounted prices and we're going to subtract the fuel tax rate in those states. So it was $1.83. In South Carolina is your price. South Carolina's fuel tax is 16 cents. So when we do the math, we end up you're paying $1.67 for fuel in South Carolina. In Florida, your price is $2.06, and the fuel tax there is 33 cents. So when we subtract that, we get $1.73. So you either pay $1.67 for fuel in South Carolina or $1.73 in Florida. Which one's the better deal?
South Carolina.
Yep.
Okay, so whenever I'm buying fuel now, so I don't go with the pump price at all. I just go on my discount price now.
And minus fuel tax
minus
in
the
that.
Tax.
Yep.
Okay. All right. That's what I was needing to know.
There you go. You're all set. Really good question. And that shows now that could change tomorrow. It could change this afternoon. So we can look at averages and learn the concept, but we actually want to be calculating this every single trip. There's a tremendous amount of savings. Now, we just recently recorded a podcast about fuel tax and fuel optimization. We haven't released it yet. We're putting together a whole program to help people with this. We'll be releasing that soon. Let's see. We're going to head off to Texas. Reginald, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Kevin? Hello?
Yep, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm a first-time caller. I love you guys. So I've only been driving about a year, and I was, as you know, a company driver, and I had an accident. It was a preventable accident. No one was seriously injured or anything like that, but they labeled it as preventable. So I'm having a hard time trying to get on with someone. My ultimate goal is to get my own truck in and drive, but I've been off for now about a month and a half. So I'm calling in to ask about how can I get, you know, to another company or go around to get about getting my own truck.
Okay, so let's talk about whether your own truck is a possibility right now or not. I mean, do you have any cash?
Right, which realistically, I don't think is a possibility. That's why I'm trying to, you know, get with, you know, another company.
Good. So let's forget about the truck for right now. We got to get you back to work and then kind of plan.
Exactly.
So here's the only way I know to fix this, honestly. Well, let me get to a break because I don't want to rush this. I want to cover this for you.
Not a problem. Not a problem.
Hang on, and we will come right back after this break, and I'll tell you really the only way I know to fix this. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're going to get right back to the phones. I was talking with Reginald in Texas. So, Reginald, I would gather as many documents as you can about the accident, you know, whatever you might get. That's always good to have. But here's what it's really going to take. I'm going to compare this to sales. I know that might sound like an odd thing. One of the things we do in sales is you just have to figure out that it might take me 30 sales calls to make one sale. And once I figure out that number, whatever it is, then all I need to do is if I need to make 3 sales this week, that means I need to make 90 phone calls.
Yes.
And that's what you've got to do here. You have got to make getting a job your full-time job. So when you were driving a truck, you were probably working 60 hours a week, right?
Easy.
You got to put 60 hours a week into getting this job. You have got to sit down with a pile of recruiting magazines, and you have got to nonstop dial the phone. You've got to go out onto – there's tons of websites for driving jobs. You've got to spend – 8 hours one day filling out the forms on every one of those job sites. And you just hammer away. Somebody out there will hire you. And position you're in right now, being that you were a fairly new driver and you've had an accident, it wasn't major. You have got to overcome that. And the easiest way to overcome it is drive for anybody else for 6 months. And that'll make this kind of go away. So you're not going to get, you're not going to get too picky about the job. And you are just, we're going to take jobs that you probably wouldn't take otherwise. Just because you've got to overcome this and you want to overcome it as quick as possible. So what carriers are going to look at a couple things. They're going to look at the accident, but if you are off work for 3 months, that's going to look worse. So you adjust when you get off the phone with me, your full-time job becomes making phone calls and filling out applications till somebody says yes.
Gotcha. Okay. Thanks much. I do have another question I had asked, but I think I was able to find it. I have a friend of mine who wants to get into the broken industry. He has a lot of capital, wanting to get into it. And he was mentioning to me, and I told him, I said, listen, I said, there's one name you need to know. I said, I heard it on one of the trucking shows I listened to. And I thought it was the guy's last name was White, but Bridget told me it's Chuck Snow. And I was able to find out his company name is Traffic. So I believe I got the name for him. I said, talk to this guy. I said, I don't know what you've been told anywhere else about any brokers. I said, I don't know anything about it. I said, but there's one name you need to know, and that's Chuck Snow.
And Chuck Snow's an amazing guy. Absolutely. He's one of our speakers at the CMC. He's just an amazing guy, always willing to help. But let me ask you a couple questions real quick. This guy wants to become a broker. What is his background?
his background is in transportation, but however, it's military transportation. He drove trucks in the military. So let me make that part of it, but I don't think he necessarily understands the industry on the outside of the military. I don't know, you know.
Probably not. So let me make another recommendation. There are several schools that teach brokering. And one of the guys who does it, I'm familiar with because I went to his class 25 years ago. The guy was brilliant back then. His name is Dave Dwinell. I think he's in Arizona now. When I went through his program, he was in Wisconsin, but I think he's in Arizona now. And I would highly recommend that. There's no place else you're going to get that concentrated education to get you up and running quickly. And in my opinion, if you want to start that business, paying to go to the school is way better than the school of hard knocks and trying to figure all this stuff out on your own. Let's go to New York. Kevin, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, how's it going?
Good. What's on your mind?
Yeah, just before I forget it, that guy that's trying to get back into walking and get out of the accident, maybe look at local jobs because those guys can be more forgiving than the big fleets.
Good point. Good point.
Yeah, my comment was about, I don't know if you saw the fines that were handed out to the truck manufacturers in Europe for fixing the prices on new trucks being sold in Europe.
Yeah. Yeah, I did.
Yeah, it's. I wonder when will that happen here?
You know, it's kind of interesting. Price fixing, and for people who don't know, because there are a lot of people who don't understand this, it is completely illegal for businesses of any kind when they are similar businesses, when they do the same thing. It is completely illegal for them to even talk about pricing because it could lead to what's called price fixing, where manufacturers or companies or businesses get together and say, hey, look, we can compete against each other, but we could also just say, none of us will sell for less than this price. That's illegal. You're not allowed to do that. In fact, when I go to industry events, trucking industry events, and there are multiple carriers there, we are not allowed to do sessions on pricing because you can't be talking about pricing together when there are multiple businesses. It's actually a pretty big deal, but it's also really, really difficult to prove. So you don't see a lot of cases of price fixing like what just happened. And in an industry where you only have a couple players, there aren't that many truck manufacturers, there could be price fixing going on that never gets caught.
And MAN, MAN trucks, they actually didn't get any fine because they ratted everyone out. But this happened in 2011, and shortly after, Zen Volkswagen, which is under the parent company, MAN, they got into all the trouble over here with fixing the emissions here. So I guess somebody got upset.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of, you know, my point about we just pile regulation on top of regulation on top of regulation when most of the time we have a hard time enforcing the ones we already have.
And at the end of the day, the reason they were fixing the prices was to cover the cost of all the new emissions engines. Because it started in 98. Our first round of emissions in Europe was in 98, Euro 3. They were just covering themselves and passing it on to the end user. So that's all I had. Thanks.
No, good stuff. And you're absolutely right. And they have to pass it on to the end user. There's no way around it. I mean, companies can't afford loss after loss after loss. They go out of business. So they have to pass things on. The consumer is always going to pay for everything. You know, corporations don't pay tax. I know that confuses people. They do write a check to the government and they give tax money to the government, but they don't pay that. They have to build it into their price in order to be able to make a profit. So the consumer pays for everything. We have to remember that. Let's go to Georgia. Mark, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Called you about 3 months ago with an oil sample, and it wasn't good, and you said it was time to do something with that engine. I got it scheduled next week to go in a shop, Detroit shop, the 12-7 2003 Freightliner. My question is, and I've ordered the exhaust manifold, turbo, and the damper for Pittsburgh Power. I already got that ready to go on there. But my question is about oil, and I've always run mineral oil in it, and I'm wanting to switch over to synthetic after I get this thing rebuilt. It was just using too much oil to run synthetic in it before.
Yeah.
My question is, do they put mineral oil in to start with and run it in a break-in period and then change it over? How does that work?
Okay, so this is one of those areas where Bruce and I kind of have a little difference of opinion, and I've said that in the past. We have a couple ideas that are a little different. Absolutely just put mineral oil in when they do the in-frame. I like to change it within 5,000 miles because you're going to build up a lot of junk, and I like to get that break-in oil out in 5,000 miles or even less sometimes. It's my belief that right then we switch to synthetic. Bruce thinks that the engine should be broken in over a longer period of time on mineral oil. I don't know how we prove which one is better. So if you do either one, it's not going to make a huge difference. But I'm going to get to a break. We'll come back and I'll kind of give you my opinion on this. And then you could also, you know, talk to Bruce and, you know, get his side too, and then make up your mind. I don't think either way you're going to have any big problem. So let's talk about it right after this break. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment. I'm going to get right back to the phone calls. I was talking with Mark in Georgia. So, Mark, here's my thought. Car manufacturers today, especially high-end cars, are almost all just built with synthetic oil. It's a better oil. But on a manufactured car engine, we don't get a lot of that same junk that we would get in a truck after an in-frame. That's the only reason that I don't put synthetic in right from the start, because we know we're going to dump out that oil early. Why spend all that money on synthetic? But for me, I like the idea, as soon as we get that junk out of there, let's break the engine in on the oil we're going to use from now on. And engines will break in on synthetic oil. There are people who believe that synthetic is so slippery, the engine won't break in right. I don't think that's true. I think it breaks in just fine, and we break it in to the oil that we're going to use. There are some people that believe we should do a longer break in on mineral oil and then switch to synthetic. I say mineral oil in the beginning, we're going to dump it out in 5,000 miles, get rid of the junk, and then I like to go right to synthetic.
Now, do you use the same type of oil filter? Is that a different filter?
No. You know, I would prefer that, you know, it has the EcoPure on there, the bypass system, but none of that really matters. I mean, you can do whatever you want, but yeah, we don't use any different kind of filters. Synthetic is just a superior oil, in my opinion, so I don't see any reason not to break in the engine on synthetic.
And there's no reason to do an oil sample after the first 5,000, right?
Probably not. I mean, this is kind of a tough call. Sometimes, I'll tell you what, I do a sample then, and the reason I do it is I want to know as soon as possible if something was done wrong. So okay. it's a little harder to read that sample because there is going to be a lot of noise in the sample because of the dirt, the wear metals, all the chemicals that were used in sealants, and it creates a lot of noise in the sample. But I've looked at enough samples that if something were going wrong, I would be able to tell even on that 5,000-mile oil sample. So since a sample is pretty cheap, I do recommend a sample even on that break-in oil.
And what are the things that alarm you on that first sample? I mean, you said you got a lot of noise, but what are some things I should look for that could be serious?
High fuel and high soot. You know, it's not unusual to have an injector installed wrong, a bad seal. So in a normal break-in, we would never see high fuel dilution. So if I see high fuel dilution right away, then we know something in the top end in the injectors didn't get done right. If we see high soot, we know the overhead probably didn't get set right. The valves aren't, you know, done properly. So there are a couple things that will jump right out at us. I will usually ignore dirt. I'll usually ignore wear metals because those are just too hard to pick out of that first sample. But typically I'm looking for high fuel dilution and high soot.
Okay. Now, will they generally mess with the ECM at all on in-frame or leave that alone?
Most shops shouldn't be touching the ECM. Now, a factory shop, like a Cummins shop or a Detroit shop.
Yeah, this is a Detroit shop, yeah.
Now, they won't normally be making any changes to the ECM, but I think they're required to check the ECM for low NOx settings and all the EPA-mandated settings. And if they find, you know, some sort of custom programming and the low NOx settings have been taken out, it's my understanding that they're required to reflash that ECM to bring it back into compliance.
So then you'd recommend probably getting it up to Pittsburgh ASAP after that and let them get that set correctly?
Yeah, and not only will they set it correctly, they'll optimize it. I mean,
they're right.
Which are legal, by the way. We're not altering anything. They've just found the best way to set all those parameters.
Exactly. Okay. Very good. Well, thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's head off to West Virginia. Steve, welcome to the program.
How you doing tonight, Kevin?
Good. What can I help you with?
I got a quick question for you. I talked to you about three or four months ago about tagging my truck for not for hire and trailer, and I want to tell you I appreciate what you've done, and you got me lined out and everything, trying to restore this truck and stuff. But my question is to you: I am a full-time UPS feeder driver, which is semi driver for UPS Ground, and I've been out of frame on this truck. I took off the road restoring, and I've spent all this money. My question is, you tax purposes, how can I write that off for this year coming, because I bought, did out of frame, bought spread axle trailer, all this stuff, paint, all the other stuff. How can I write it off, or can I not?
What are you planning on doing with this truck when it's done?
Well, I'm basically just going to keep it. I got two boys. I'm just really going to go to the, like schools and stuff to show it to kids and stuff. I'm not going to do any truck shows, but possibly could, but I just got it for me personally, for me, my wife and kids, for whenever we want to go anywhere, but that's basically mainly what I just got it. I've been owning it since. So
what that means is this is really going to kind of be classified as a personal vehicle, not a commercial vehicle. You're not using it.
Right.
That's why
I got it personal.
Right.
That's
so,
why I got tagged. It's not for hire. Personal.
Which means there are no tax deductions whatsoever. Now, that doesn't mean you can't create some tax deductions. We would have to get a little creative. And what has to happen is you have to come up with some way that you are using this truck as a business. It doesn't have to be big. It doesn't have to be your only source of income. It just means that you are attempting to use this truck to make money somehow. And that's where we would have to get creative. Are you going to maybe put the truck out for hire on the weekends and move containers around, which is an option?
No.
If you're not going to pursue making money with the truck, which is fine. If you don't want to do that, then don't do it. But if you're not, then there's no way to take a tax deduction.
Even though if my wife owns commercial property, there's no way I could even tie it into her stuff.
Oh, no, there's an idea. If you use this truck to move or do work on that commercial property, then we could use it as a tax write-off on her business.
Okay, that'll work then, because she owns a counseling service, but she has commercial property, like buildings that she owns and does her counseling out of, and my shop that I have it in is on some of her property, or our property.
So here's what we're going to do. You're going to say, hey, we have this property, and when we service that property, maintain it, fix things, this is the truck we use to haul our supplies and tools around to do it.
Okay. What about the trailer? Can I even depreciate the trailer since I bought this spread this past year? Can I even depreciate it?
Yeah, absolutely. We just need to have some revenue to depreciate it against. That's kind of why you're going to tie this into the other business that we're using this truck to move tools and supplies for the commercial real estate business. Let's go to Oklahoma. Bill, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call.
Welcome.
I recently had to let go of the person who's doing my fuel tax. Now I'm scrambling trying to figure out how to get my fuel tax done, how to figure it out, and get it filed. Is there some place I can go that'll show me step by step how to do it, or do I just need to find somebody and have them do it?
No, actually, fuel tax is one of those things I think you really should do on your own. Right now, if you just need to get it done, you can literally just go to your state's website or whatever state you have your IFTA in. That doesn't always have to be your home state, but wherever you file your IFTA, virtually every state now has the forms available online, and the instructions are there, and it's not that difficult. It's pretty simple. You just, in each state, you show, here's how many miles I drove and here's how many gallons I bought. And that's really all there is to fuel tax. So you can probably do it online right at the state. Now, I talked earlier about a podcast we recently did, and we are really, really close to having a great solution to filing your fuel tax. Something that's super simple. Not very expensive at all, and also has fuel optimization as part of it, and you will save more money than you spend. We're just not quite ready to release it yet. So you can wait a little bit for us, or if you have to file something now, then you could go right to the state's website, read the instructions, and you should be able to figure it out. It's fairly simple. I'm all out of time. We'll talk about that more next time. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rothenberg. All right, everybody, thanks. We'll see you back here tomorrow for Destination Health and more general questions.